The West Live. The West Live with Jenna Clark. Brought to you by Neds. Take it to the Neds level. Gamble responsibly. 1-800-858-858.
The Minister for Indigenous Australians, Ken White, will join me to discuss this shocking case of an 11-year-old Indigenous girl in a regional town here in WA who took her own life. But first, I want to try and get my head around the legalities and the legal framework of this case. And joining me now is Tom Percy QC. Tom, thank you so very much for your time. We understand the alleged sex abuser had been granted bail. Is that unusual?
Oh, not really. I mean, we have to start from the presumption of innocence, and when someone's arrested, it's only an allegation, and it stays that way until there's a conviction. So that may be two or more years down the track. So it's highly regular for people to be granted bail in relation to even the most serious cases.
Now, there was this phrase, protective bail. Can you just explain what that means for us?
Well, usually if there's a person who is known to the alleged offender, then it's important that they stay away from them, both for the protection of that person and for the integrity of the trial process. So that's not unusual in cases such as sexual assault, where people are asked as part of their bail conditions to refrain from any contact with the other party.
Sure. Is protective bail, specifically in places in regional WA, where towns are very small and everyone seems to know each other, is that enough out there and in those towns?
Well, I'm not sure what else they can do. I mean, if you're going to lock up everyone from the time they're arrested until the time they have their trial, we're going to have to build another three Casuarina prisons.
Yeah.
But apart from that, it would be entirely unfair because many people go to trial and are acquitted, so you can't keep them in jail as long as we as a community embrace the proposition that you're innocent until you're proven guilty. So what exactly other than protective bail conditions could be imposed, I'm not sure. I know in the metropolitan area at least, they do have witness protective services, and they look after vulnerable people who are awaiting their day in court, and they can liaise with counsellors and deal with it on that basis. So apart from that, I'm not sure exactly where we go with this type of situation.
Have you, during your career, have you seen a lot of these cases, or is this a recent phenomena that seems to be happening in our society, do you think, where we're seeing young children taking their own lives at the result of a court hearing?
Well, I can't say that I've seen it before. I've only been in practice 45 years. I think that what you see more often is that the judicial process does take a stress on and exerts a toll on both parties, both the accused and the complainant. So it's not unusual for both of them to suffer during the course of the trial. On the other hand, I've had a number of clients who've taken their own lives before they got to trial. They just couldn't stand the stress of it anymore, not because they were guilty. Most of them, I thought, had good defences, but sometimes they commit suicide, and indeed, I can't see that there's a systemic failure in this, because it's just part of the system, as it seems.
Yeah. Do you think that this is going to raise an issue? And please forgive me if I'm going a little bit off-piste with this, but I know we saw earlier in the year where the Attorney General, John Quigley, basically said that we're going to see more JPs handle a lot of the magistrate work in regional WA. Is this a good idea, do you think?
Oh, look, I think JPs are better off just witnessing documents. I don't think they have a part in the judicial process, as difficult as it is sometimes to get enough magistrates to deal with matters. I really think that, except for highly non-contentious matters where they effectively just have to rubber stamp a decision that both parties agree with, I'm not sure I'm a big fan of JPs being heavily involved in the justice system.
What other ways could, say, the alleged victim and the alleged perpetrator in these situations, could they be supported? And is it something like, we've spoken numerous times about how the legal system sort of needs to change to allow things like live streaming and stuff moving forward. How do we help the welfare of victims and perpetrators in the legal system?
Well, as I said, in the metropolitan area, there are witness protection services, people who are employed and skilled at looking after people who are going to give evidence in a court case. They're available to be contacted whenever something like this happens. But youth suicide is by no means a new problem, Jenna, and can happen from any amount of things, because of medical reasons, because of bullying, because of internet situations. It can happen, obviously, as happened in this case, as a result of the stress that's resulted from the court case. But I don't think there's much more that we could ask the judicial system or the government to do in this case. Mm. It's dreadfully unfortunate, as is all youth suicide, but it can come from a number of factors, and I just think this is just one of them.
Yeah, it's. I guess it's definitely wrong just to point the finger at blame at one specific organisation, that's for sure. Tom Percy, QC, thanks for your time on the West Live. We'll chat to you again later.
Thanks, Jen. I'll catch you soon.